Off the Ball, GAA.
This year I just had a lot of motivation to right the wrongs of last year, because I didn't have a good year last year personally, so that was a big thing for me.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Run on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Off the Ball. We are with you as always until 10 o'clock this evening. And coming up tonight, we're going to be speaking to athletics writer Cathal Dennehy from around 7:30. He is going to give us the insight, the reasons behind Rashida Adeleke's decision to not partake at the World Championships in Tokyo next month. She's had a very difficult year, and Cathal Dennehy's been following it the whole way. So very much looking forward to chatting to him from 7:30. After 8 o'clock then, we're going to be joined by Mayo footballer Shiroz Akram for the latest in our Guinness 0-0 series, Settle In. Shiroz came here with his family from Pakistan, was an excellent soccer player, was the captain of the Roscommon Kennedy Cup soccer team, obviously, at under 14 level. And then he ended up representing Mayo at Gaelic football level. So no surprises to tell you that he is from Ballyhadrin. His hero is Andy Moran, and he's going to be playing for his hero next year, you suspect, for the Mayo footballers under Andy Moran as well. So loads to chat to Shiroz about between 8 and 9. And then between 9 and 10, the football show is going to feature Dan Bardell to talk about the fan discontent at Villa Park on Saturday, with both Villa fans and Newcastle fans voicing their displeasure with the Premier League over what they believe to be overly stringent financial rules. And then on top of that, we're going to be joined by Kieran Maguire of The Price of Football that hour for a bigger picture look at the same conversation. Our number is 0879 180 180, if you want to drop us WhatsApp. Michael McCarthy is here. Hello, Mick.
Hey, I'm Owen. How are you?
All good. And Cameron Hill is here. Hey, Cameron.
Hello, Owen. Am I right in thinking Shiroz Akram was on like an amazing DCU Sigerson Cup team as well? People know out there, I'm fairly sure I remember that they were like, this was like one of the greatest DCU Sigerson teams of all time.
It quite well could have been. I don't know off the top of my head. He is back over the last couple of years, or maybe just this year with the Mayo footballers. He had been away from the fold for a couple of seasons, but he is back involved. He played a little bit of championship this year as well, so he's back to playing at senior level. He was a brilliant underage footballer with the Mayo under-21s as well, if I recall. So he's got a great story.
Did win the Sigerson Cup.
Yeah.
And so I presume the team is amazing that he played on.
Go. It has to be.
Welcome back, Cameron, to the Premier League. As a Leeds United fan, you now have to fly that flag on the show for the duration of the season. So take your first lap of honour here after your first 3 points last night.
First 3 points, vital, you'd feel, in the bid to stay up against a team that maybe we'll be dragging down towards the bottom of the table. You never know. I know there's been a spectrum of opinions on how Everton will do this year, but I think given what they did last night and how they went about last night's game, you'd fear for them a little bit if they're just going to sit back. There was a stat that flashed up during the first half of XG, and Leeds had 0.4 and there was just a big fat zero beside Everton, so it kind of showed you what the approach was yesterday. But listen, probably fortuitous enough to get the penalty, but it's 3 points and we're up and running.
I think if you've learned anything, it's never write Everton out of a potential relegation battle. It could always be there or thereabouts in a very, very bad sense. A new stadium doesn't necessarily clear their reputation on that front, but you would have thought maybe after how they ended last season, they could be in a position to move further up the table. But on Leeds United, it feels like they belong in the Premier League.
Such a Premier League team, and you kind of realise that when you watch the first game of a return.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember it being the same when they came up a few years ago. I remember Forrest really having this feeling the first game of the City Ground in, what was it, like 21 years or something, or 25 years, a couple of seasons ago. They beat West Ham. And I just remember thinking, this is the best atmosphere I can remember at a Premier League ground in years. And there was that sense of, we're back, baby. Now, Leeds haven't been gone all that long, I guess, but it felt like Elland Road just really belonged last night. And it was also that sort of feeling of like, it's still summer, so everyone's kind of in their jerseys and it's just white, yellow and blue everywhere. Mm-hmm. Last year's cool yellow away jersey, this year's cool blue jersey. They're the Leeds colours. It's about time the owners have started realising it, by the way, as well, because this is last year was the first yellow jersey they had under the new owners. This year's the first blue one. You know, it's a beautiful, it's a throwback to the, do you remember the Mark Viduka kind of late in the, the sort of late great, you know, team where Robbie Keane and Alan Smith and all those players were
on the front. Yeah, yeah. What? White McKay, I think, was the sponsor.
No, it was Strongbow, I'm almost sure, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it very much looks like that jersey. So anyway, not to be going on about jerseys out of nowhere for absolutely no reason, but Ellen Road felt home. And then they were good. Like, they were a very good performance last night.
It was a proper return, though. Like, the first one, as you say, it's only been a couple of years, but, like, that was the Liverpool game in COVID behind closed doors, which was an amazing game. I think it was 4-3 to Liverpool on the day. But this felt like, oh, we're actually properly back, Ellen Road.
That is true. I'd forgotten that had happened during COVID. But on your point about Leeds being a proper Premier League club, totally agree with you. But there's obviously a limit to how many teams you can say that about. So, I mean, this is I'm obviously luring you into a trap where half the Premier League is going to hate you. But what number are we putting it at? Like, how many teams are real Premier League clubs and how many are not? Are there teams in the Premier League who are not real Premier League clubs,
yeah,
for example?
It's not that they don't. It's that they're at home in the Championship as they are in the Premier League.
So who are we talking here?
Okay, well, we work upwards.
Yeah.
Burnley.
Yeah.
You know, I think Burnley have done well to establish themselves as a Premier League yo-yo club. Yeah. You know, they don't not belong in the Premier League, but they also, you know, nobody was surprised when they weren't there. Let's be honest. Bournemouth.
The Nouveau Riche.
There's like, 13,000 fit into the Vitality?
Yeah. You're going to get all four Bs here.
Yeah, I think we know where you're going next.
Brentford.
Yeah. Yeah. And then...
I'm feeling like Brighton... Brighton is one of the bigger, growing cities in England. And they're a very, very well-run club and they've been there quite a while now. If Brighton can last another 3-4 years, I think we'll become the next generation, the generation coming up who see... for like Middlesbrough as a Premier League club the way we do, right? Mm. Will I think see Brighton there and they will establish themselves. I think Brighton will last. But at the moment, you know, if they fell down, would anybody really cry?
What about Fulham? So they're 9 seasons in the Premier League. So what do you say, Fulham next? Fulham and Wolves are the next two interesting ones.
Yeah, Wolves. Wolves are one of those clubs that you like to see up. That's the next level down.
Yeah.
They're the ones that say, it's great to see Wolves in the Premier League. You know, when they do come back up. They don't not belong, but they're not that... they're a Premier League club. They need to be here.
Okay.
Forest, I wouldn't have said. Forest are probably...
Forest are on the Leeds level.
Forest, are they? Yeah, I think so.
I would put them there, yeah.
Sometimes it is the feeling of like the fans and stuff and what way the ground feels, you know? Who's not there that should be there? Sunderland, by the way, absolutely Premier League.
Yeah, club. Blackburn should be there, right? They should be in
that. Or
Blackburn
has been gone for so long.
Kind of faded. Yeah.
And are we saying that Aston Villa are a Premier League club, yeah?
Well, they've been in all but 3 Premier League seasons, I would say. Yeah, so Newcastle as well. You know, Newcastle and Aston Villa, despite the eagerness of everybody to keep them out of things, are probably Premier League clubs, as are the big six, I would say. It would be hard to have a Premier League without them. And, of course, Everton.
Should West Ham be more of a yo-yo than they've been?
Like, yeah, West Ham are one of those teams that win. But West Ham, when they are gone, even though they consistently get relegated, are a team that you miss.
Yeah, they're
a team that you feel like should... They'd be one if they were gone for 10 years. We'd be like, they're a Premier League club. They should be there. So, yeah, I've gone off the top of my head. I haven't got a league table ahead in front of me, so I'm forgetting plenty, I'm sure.
But I think we've got about 14, 15 Premier League teams in the Premier League this season is basically the conclusion that we've come
more
to
more up than usual.
Well, I think
if you've got Sunderland and Leeds both promoted, like that was a good... Championship last season.
Yeah. Good for the high reputation clubs that came back up.
The John Giles era with Off the Ball has come to an emotional end.
Off the Ball wouldn't exist the way it does without the existence of John Giles.
Helped by a plethora of John's friends and family within and without football, we pay tribute to the great man in front of a selected audience.
So we are here tonight to celebrate not just the impact John has had on Off the Ball over the last 20 years or so, but really the unrivaled impact that he's had on Irish football going back 70 years.
This week in the OTB football feed, look out for the full John Giles tribute night.
If we didn't say John was the best player I've ever played with, he would tell you why he was.
Eddie, I might come to that in a minute. Yeah. Yeah.
We speak to John himself about his 7 decades in football, former Leeds teammates Eddie Gray and Joe Jordan, plus tributes from Liam Brady, Brian Kerr and many more.
As you say, it's what, 20 odd?
23 years.
20 years. Well, they did well to put up with me for 20 years.
Released in 3 parts, we'll drop the first part of the John Giles tribute night on Tuesday morning. And to mark the occasion, it will be available for free for a limited time only. The John Giles tribute, only available in your OTB football feed.
let's look into the news round. Cameron, it is here with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. Where do you want to start?
Well, David Clifford is hopeful that Jack O'Connor will remain in charge of the Kerry footballers in 2026. O'Connor returned for his third stint in the Kingdom Hearts seat back in 2021 and guided the county to this year's All-Ireland title. That's the second time that Clifford has lifted Sam Maguire, his first coming under O'Connor in 2022. And the Fossa Club man joined Jerome Cullum on this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast.
I haven't actually really been talking to him much since, but sure, of course. Like you'd like to keep it the way it was last year because it went so well. He's a football man. He understands football very well, particularly forward play. I suppose he's a good understanding of that. But he's a very wise. There isn't many situations that he hasn't encountered. Do you know what I mean? If whether it's like our loss to Meath, this year, yeah. Said he's been through things like that, and he knows how to respond. He knows when it's time to make big changes, or he knows when it's time to actually be calm and not make big changes. He's just wise. We get on with him, and he gets on with people. He's very honest with people, so I think that's probably his biggest strength. You kind of always know where you stand with Jack, so that's the key, you know.
That is one of the things about Jack O'Connor. He's never gone back to back as a manager. He turned down that opportunity in 2006 when he stepped down quite quickly, actually, or he certainly seemed to have made that decision very quickly after 2006. I wonder, does he wish he slept on it a few more nights and actually took a team that were the best in the country at that point to back-to-back. Now, to be fair, Pat O'Shea, magnificent manager, so...
Did his imprint on it as well, and could have easily won two All-Irelands, with, like, 2008 wasn't all that far away and made a final. But given how great Kerry were at that time, I look back at it now and I think, was 2007 the most straightforward? Because 2006 went that way, but there was the whole... overcoming what had happened in 05 to it. And it is like basically the story of Jack O'Connor's book is the 2006 All-Ireland and winning that and the drama, and much like this year, actually, the kind of the heartache that went into it. But then in 07, that Cork team weren't quite ready.
No.
And obviously there was a couple of soft goals in the final that people remember. But at the same time, it felt like, that was, maybe they didn't hammer a Mayo in the final, but... the overall All-Ireland might have been the easiest one they had,
Yeah, and they came through the front door that year as well, which obviously wasn't how it happened in a couple of those years that Jack won as well. So, interesting to see what happens. Definitely feels that it's moving towards the idea that he will stay on. And I think maybe he kind of also a bit of a reflex after the full-time whistle, 3 weeks ago at this point, and maybe after a bit of thought, it seems that there's a bit of a movement towards keeping him on.
Is it also getting to the stage now where, given the way we're going, and I do realise we say this in the shortened season, it is only the 19th of August, it's almost a little late not to commit to next year at this stage? Especially for a team like Kerry, you're going to have a full-on process, and the championship is being played. You want your manager in place for next season already, don't you?
And you probably want to be watching the club games, yeah.
I think there's no harm in him kind of putting the feelers out and seeing how much, when they lost the semi-final last year, do you remember he was sort of, all the people in Kerry kind of dismissing this team and not getting out and coming out to bat and supporting us in this way? And Clifford kind of alludes to it today when he's talking to Jerome Cullum, but maybe this is the converse of that it's sort of like, okay, tell me how much you love me. I don't know if I'm going to stick around. there's a little bit of appeal to me here, and make sure that I stay, because I don't know, maybe I am sated, unless I want to go for one more year. And it's almost, you have to make the appeal to him. It's not a bad position for Jack O'Connor to be in.
Yeah, I think they go quite late last year as well with regards to getting that management team together, but they obviously managed to get it together just in time to ensure that he's stayed on, and it paid off handsomely. We'll move to the soccer, Cameron.
Yeah, the draw for the quarterfinals of the men's FAI Cup was made today, and Drogheda United will face the toughest of tests next month in their bid to retain it. So Kevin O'Doherty's side have been drawn at home to current Premier Division leaders Shamrock Rovers, while Cork City will make the trip to Finn Harps. Stephen Kenny and John Caulfield will renew their managerial rivalry when St. Pat's host Galway United, and Kerry are in the last eight for the first time in their history. They'll welcome Sligo Rovers to Mount Hawke Park in those ties, which are due to take place on the weekend of September 14th, along with Shamrock Rovers hosting last year's runners-up Athlone Town in the semi-finals of the Women's FAI Cup. So that's also down for that weekend, while Bohemians will entertain Treaty United in the other last four tie. Bows are also in action tonight in the SSC Airtricity Women's Premier Division. Piemont United, the visitors to Dalymount Park from 7:30.
Now then, we have some venue news for Shelburne in Europe.
Their Conference League playoff second leg against Linfield will go ahead at Windsor Park on Thursday week. A Sam Fender concert on the same night at nearby Boucher Road playing field had raised concerns over stewarding numbers for both events on the night. According to reports, the club, UEFA and the PSNI had looked into bringing the game forward by a day to Wednesday, August 27th, but it seems the club reached out to the PSNI saying they would have provisions in place to allow the game to take place along with that concert.
We do have live football at home tonight.
Yeah, as I mentioned, the Women's Premier Division game tonight at 7:30 at Dalymount, Bows against Piemont United.
Where do you want to go next?
Well, Celtic boss Brendan Rodgers has refused to comment about a potential reunion with Jamie Vardy. The striker is without a club after leaving Leicester this summer, where he worked briefly with Rodgers during a 13-year spell in the East Midlands. And Rodgers was tight-lipped when asked about speculation linking them with a move.
Listen, I would not speak about any individual player. Of course, I worked really well with Jamie. He was brilliant for me in my time at Leicester. But no, there's been so many names floated about, but I wouldn't disclose either way.
Just on the topic of Shelburne, as we were mentioning there earlier on, we should mention that we are bringing the game to you live this Thursday between Shelburne and Linfield. So that's the first leg of their Conference League playoff. So it's going to be Vinnie Perth alongside Nathan calling that one on Thursday night. So a massive couple of games for Shells. You'd imagine they are favourites for this tie, given they have already beaten Linfield this summer, but still huge pressure. It's going to be fantastic. And as I say, Nathan and Vinny, 7:45 Thursday night.
It feels like we've just been living in Talca Park this season, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For one reason or another. But what a huge game. I've been looking into the real Premier League clubs thing. You kind of stumped me on the spot with it, and I've been thinking about it, looking through the Championship. You're right. This season is like Sunderland and Leeds getting promoted. Nobody really going down in that ilk, except for the only suggestion I have that's outside of the Premier League at the moment that's a true Premier League club. There is Southampton, I think, belong in the Premier League, but I don't think they're one of those ones that have to be there all the time. I think Middlesbrough, Blackburn, QPR. Like, there's a lot of clubs like that like have places in my heart in the Premier League. Norwich, yeah. City.
Mm.
Leicester. Charlton. I think Leicester have done enough to earn proper Premier League club status, have they? Will they always be yo-yos?
They've won the thing. It's a strong claim to.
Yeah, so Blackburn though.
Yeah, and we still talk about Leicester as this surprise.
And we also talk about, I think about it as something that happened very recently. We're living through the 10-year anniversaries of the Leicester City winning the Premier League season.
Amazing. Middlesbrough, West Brom. West Brom have been relegated, I think, 7 times or something like that from the Premier League. So you can't say.
I don't think so.
You can't say it's necessarily them. Charlton, Norwich again, high relegation capacity.
Count. Yeah. I know, but a bona fide top 30 team, I think, is what you'd call them.
That's what the yo-yo teams are from 12 to 30.
Yeah.
They all feel at home in the Premier League, but you don't quite miss them when they're gone.
In the upper echelons of the pyramid is where you'd place them.
Will O'Callaghan has mentioned Oldham Athletic, who are currently playing their trade in League Two. And I can't have that. That's very your dad driving by some rundown place. Do you know that used to be a great nightclub? That's how that feels.
Oldham Athletic.
That's me now.
That was the hot spot back in the day, Oldham Athletic.
Oh my God, I drove through an area that I used to live with my kids in the car the other day and was very much I used to do this here, I used to do that. God, it's all very different now. I was like, I felt like the oldest man in the world.
And what was their reaction?
Silence. Could not have given the mess of a crap.
No intrigue. No sort of like follow-up question.
Absolutely not.
Maybe in a few years. We do have European football tonight, Cameron.
Yes, indeed. So we mentioned Celtic this evening. Rangers host Club Brugge in the first leg of their Champions League playoff at Ibrox from 8 o'clock. At the same time, Robbie Keane's Ferencvaros host Karabakh, who knocked Shelburne out of the second round of qualifying for the Champions League. The Hungarian Kingpins are hoping for a first appearance in the group stages since 2020, and Keane believes they have what it takes to get over the line.
But we have a chance, of course, because I think if the way we play and the way we want to play, I think we can cause them a lot of problems. I think in any situation when you're playing in the two legs, most important is a clean sheet, because we have players in the team that we know that can score goals, and that can be dangerous. But when you get to this level, you're playing against different opposition. The higher you go, the harder it becomes. So we know that they're a good team. You know, this is the first time the guys have been in this situation for the club for a good few years. But we have to embrace it, enjoy it. And this is why I'm a coach, and the players want to play at the highest level. So it doesn't get any higher than this. So they know the importance of the game.
This is evidently the first time I've ever heard Robbie Keane speak as Ferencváros manager. Yeah. Steve McLaren molds.
Absolutely, yeah. It's kind of hilarious because we've heard Robbie Keane speak for 30 years and we know how he talks.
I did not know that was a thing.
There must be just something in that, you know, we could all be the language police and the accent police, but there's a reason they all do it. It must be something to do with they're constantly trying to communicate in the same tone as when you don't know the language, especially as a manager, you're at this disadvantage. So the first thing you can do is learn the way, the cadence of the sentences.
And it's still absolutely hilarious.
I'm making excuses for it, to be fair, but it doesn't make it any less funny.
Yeah. Maybe it's the Irish accent, that it's sort of like, would we have needed an Irish to English and then English to Hungarian translator and then a Hungarian to Azerbaijani translator was in there today as well.
Right.
So there might have been like just one less on the payroll. He also kept mentioning James Bond weirdly in the presser. I'm not 100% sure where the reference, but he kept talking about, you know, the villain changes from game to, or movie to movie in James Bond. You don't have the same. And I don't know why that was the metaphor to hand, but anyway.
It is true. Different villain every week after the Sunday game on the latest episode of James Bond. Where do you want to take us next, Cameron?
Real Madrid, they're going to get their La Liga campaign up and running this evening. Xabi Alonso's side at home to Osasuna with an 8 o'clock kickoff at the Bernabeu. Some transfer news to bring you as well today, Owen. Brentford's Johan Wissa reportedly remains angry that the transfer to Newcastle has still not happened. The forward has deleted all traces of the London club from his personal social media, while also telling them he won't play for their team again. It's understood that Newcastle have yet to table a new bid for the 28-year-old. Wolves have today confirmed the signing of defender Jackson Chachua from Serie A club Hellas Verona. The Cameroonian right-back has moved to Molineux on a 5-year deal for a fee of just over €11.5 million. And in the last few minutes, Leeds are finalising a deal, in fact, for AC Milan player Noah Okafor in the region of €22 million.
Our colleague Steve Daunt has been in touch to say Coventry in all caps. No. Another texter has suggested Blackpool and Sheffield United both deserve a mention.
I think Blackpool and Oldham are crackpot suggestions.
Yeah.
Like Blackpool were there for 1 year. They are the opposite of a Premier League club. They're the miracle club. Oldham haven't been there since the second year of the Premier League. They survived at the last day of the first ever Premier League and they were relegated with no points the following year.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Huddersfield suggestion.
Exactly.
It's lovely, warm Premier League memories of you being in that division.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah.
Sheffield United, on the other hand, is definitely...
Kind of. They're in yo-yo territory.
Top 30.
Where's Hull? What do you reckon about Hull?
You think of like them
East
being the
Yorkshire
ones that can... That can like arrive and immediately make a point as soon as they arrive. Mm. No, you think Giovanni.
Phil Brown.
Lely King.
You think Phil Brown. And you think of like the spiral.
To Steve's point about Coventry, though, that's a very generational thing because Coventry and Southampton were mainstays. Neither of them got relegated for about 10 Premier League seasons when it started and were there, always kind of fighting off relegation, in fairness, but were, you know, very much Premier League clubs. I was excited when they got to the playoff final a couple of years ago, or last season, the season before last. And I think that is a litmus test of, if you're excited that they're in the playoff final, is that a litmus test of whether you're a real Premier League club?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So Coventry could have a claim here.
Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying. Cameron, I'm keen to get just to a couple of other stories here. This is really interesting news from the URC.
Yeah, they could be set to bring in two American-based clubs into the league. URC officials are in talks to expand the competition to six nations, with two Welsh clubs likely to leave. That's as Wales's Rugby Union are expected to reveal plans within the next 24 hours to axe at least one of their four professional sides.
What do you make of this? The introduction of a couple of American sides into the URC, but simultaneously this is a story of further woe for Welsh rugby.
Yeah, I know. And look, I was even just thinking about that. We were talking about Lewis Rees-Ahmed earlier, and it was like how, you know, there wasn't even a consideration that he would go to a Welsh club, you know, because it just wasn't something that it seemed like they could afford. So, yeah, don't know how you rescue that. I'm interested in the American thing. I just don't know how you can continue to go. How do you go from, you know, expanding from a British and Irish base? You know, bringing in Italy was even seen as kind of crazy all those years ago. Now you go South Africa, and now you're bringing in America as well. Mm. Like, I don't know. It's not a golf tour. Do you know what I mean? At some point, you're like, there has to be a domestic to a domestic league. So as much as I think growing the game, yeah, but it's adding another like insane.
At least we'll be in the same season
level to it,
like literal planet Earth season, like. The bizarre nature of like Munster play a game in summer and then play a game in winter
for next week. Yeah. Well, fine. Yeah, I suppose
that is like bonkers. Now, the thing, the counterpoint to that is that you've got a really rich rugby culture being tapped into with the South African sides.
Yeah,
and then you're tapping into a wannabe rugby culture in the United States.
Who's going to be at these games? And yeah, it's just bizarre.
The second
isn't
it? Paragraph in that Telegraph story, they were the ones who broke it today, was there's big money on the table, was a big quote. And that's, you know, that's the driving force behind this, right? Really. Yeah.
And look, I think we all realize it would be a sport in a better place if there was strong American interest in it. I think we all kind of want it, but just like a constant talking point every year, it's like American interest, you know, spreading the game to new places.
But it does feel like at some point then the Irish teams are in the, you know, the Premiership is established and the top 14 is established, and then Super Rugby is established, and then it's like, right, we're in with everybody else and let's keep expanding it forever. And like, you know, none of the rest of them will ever have to bring in new teams or ever have to expand or go to new eras, but we're in the, you know, the World Tour League, which I don't think ultimately does anybody any favours.
No, like, do like Toulouse have to go to San Diego now for European Champions Cup pool games? Like, is that the next step? Is that what's going to happen? It's just, it's such a bizarre, like I've said it before, that rugby as a sport geographically makes absolutely no sense. And this is just further proof of that.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. The further this expands, the more irrelevant the Champions Cup becomes. I think even you look at the South African attitudes towards that competition, it says quite a lot where they care more about the URC than they do about the competition that we care more about in the European Cup. So, yeah, beyond the patently ridiculous notion of them being involved in the European Cup, there is that as well. Do you want to finish up on the women's team, Cameron?
Yeah, so next month's Women's Rugby Club World Cup final at Twickenham has officially sold out today, meaning it's on course to be the biggest ever crowd at a one-off women's game. Close to 59,000 fans watched England play France in the 2023 Six Nations at Twickenham, which has a capacity of 82,000. The World Cup gets underway on Friday at the London venue, while Ireland kick off their campaign this Sunday against Japan in Northampton. And speaking last month, hooker Cliona Maloney-McDonald reckons this edition of the tournament could be a game changer for women's rugby.
I think it could be, like, it's been thrown around a lot like a game-changing moment for women's rugby, but I do really think with the amount of support that is in and around this part of the world for women's rugby, I do think it'll be a point in time that we'll look back on and say that was where the tide turned, and, you know, support really got ploughed in for everyone this side of the world, I would say, particularly for women's rugby and the growth of that game. One thing I would add is that, like, the length of the tournament is probably the biggest thing people need to prepare for. Like, it's a long, intense tournament, and it's a very intense environment, and probably, like, media presence and pressure will be at the most intense it's ever been for anyone. And that's the only really, like, I don't think anyone can prepare you for that other than your own personal preparation and focus. I can't give anyone any advice on how to deal with that because none of us have experienced that level before.
All right, Cameron, thank you for tonight's news round. Mike McCarthy, thank you very much as well. We'll be chatting athletics with Cathal Dennehy next. And before that, it's time for the Cash Machine.